Republican, everyone, sports fans out there in podcast land, Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain with a No Filter Sports Podcast. This edition, November 4th, 2019. Bobby Hull will be our guest later in the show. And man, I am excited. You know, as a jaded, hardened character than I am, all these years doing this, I'm thrilled that we can talk to somebody just, I mean, he's just a legend. He's larger than life. And as a kid, Bobby Hull is going to be on our show. I'm very excited.
And when you're sitting across from a legend who is larger than life every time we do this program. And I'm not talking about me. So why are you so thrilled? There's Denny McClain right there.
Well, I've gotten
right
over
across
that.
From you,
I've
right
gotten over
from
that.
You got over that a long time
ago. Yeah, a long time ago.
The first time I ever met Bobby was at the Olympia in the visitor's locker room after a game back in the late 70s. And I was just shocked. I'm not a big guy, as you know. I'm maybe 5'9 and a half. He was at least an inch shorter than I was. And then when I asked him about the players, quote unquote, today, this is 40 years ago. Today, he says, these kids today are so much better than we ever were.
Really?
They're so big and strong and fast. That was 40 years ago. So we'll ask him about what he thinks of today.
Well, and actually 47 years ago, he scored his 600th goal, only the second in NHL history to do it. Gordie Howe had been the first.
The Hawks with the extra man. Pitt Martin on the right side. Left wing pass to Dennis Hull. And Dennis hurries in, leaves it for Bobby. Shot, score, 600 National Hockey League goals.
That's big.
It's big. That's big. Anyway, so we're going to talk to Bobby Hull. We got a lot of football to do levels. College,
by the way,
pro.
I spent quite a bit of time with him the last two out of the last four weekends, different shows. And the guy is so entertaining. I hope he's half as entertaining on the show today as he was when we were sitting in the lounge area and he was sipping back one and having a good time.
Good.
Because, man, he's got the Santa Claus laugh. It's just, ho, 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 ho.
And by the way, on Thursday, he's going to give me a confirmation today, but Alan Trammell says he'll come on with us Thursday. Looking forward to having a lot of fun with him. I go way, way back with Alan Trammell, as does Bob Page.
I was the first guy who ever put him on TV in Detroit. When I worked at Channel 7, they brought Tram and Lou up the same day, and that day I got down early to the ballpark. I lined them both up on camera and did an interview, and I sure as hell wish I had that tape or that film somewhere.
How hard did you two have to work to get them to say something?
Well,
they weren't the greatest interviews in the world.
Hard with Lewis.
Yeah. Hard with Lewis. Alan always gave good answers. But Ralph Houk built them. You know, the 75 Tigers, I think Alan got drafted in 75. The 75 Tigers lost 100 games. They were an awful team, as the 68 team was pretty much on its last legs. And Ralph Houk touted these two guys, Trammell and Whitaker, because Campbell had moved Whitaker from third base to second base. And let's make this a great double play combination. Yep. Lou had been a third baseman. And so they show up in spring training. They went back to the minors that year. They came at the end of the season, must have been 77. And here are these two little guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Tram was listed as 6 feet, but he was skinny. Yeah. I said, really? Are they big enough to play Major League Baseball?
Eli, that was the pre-roid era. The poor guys just didn't know.
And Alan had power. They both had power. They were both
good hitters.
Hit a lot of home runs.
Really good hitters.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, all the great home runs that have been hit at the old Tiger Stadium over the years, one of the very few that I remember most, just it's a typical game. Lewis is at bat, I'm upstairs in the press box, and he really tees off on one, and you can see it was going to be a home run. This thing was rising as it gets toward the upper deck in right field, and god damned if it doesn't clear the roof. I've never seen that before live. It just suddenly disappeared over the roof.
That's right down
I've
the
never
line.
Forgotten
yeah. only 17 balls were hit over. So
he was a dead low ball hitter,
Lou,
and if you threw the ball down below the thigh, he was going to hit it hard someplace.
And I want Alan get Alan's spin on why he's in the Hall of Fame and Lou is, and I have my theories, and I wonder if Alan has his. But, you know, so, okay, cover the Tigers all those years. I was kind of the same age as the 84 Tigers. They were a couple years younger than me, but, you know, I was like, when they won in 84, I was 34, most of about 27, 28. And so I figured, you know, it's not going to last. I mean, they're up against the Royals in the playoffs, the great George Brett. They can't beat them. These young guys, I knew when they were teenagers. How could that happen? Sure enough, they sweep them in three games. But the first game, I'm thinking, there's just no way they can do it. They're going to be intimidated. First batter, Lou lines a single. Trammell, it's another one. Gibson knocks it up 2-0. After me, I go, wow, they're not intimidated. They're going to win.
The game is neutral.
I never felt that way. I didn't feel that way about that club. I thought they were going to win.
Well, They should
have 35-5 to start the season. They just didn't have much of a weakness, you know.
But, you know, they said George Brett and the Royals, whatever. It was just as having known them since they were young and being nervous for them, I shouldn't have been surprised at how cool and collected they were and how confident they were.
Well, I forget what time of year it was, but it was somewhere late in the year when that lead of 35-5 went away. And they showed some resiliency at that point in time when I think they swept a weekend from the second place club, whoever it was.
Toronto. Well, but when we had Rupert Jones on, I'd forgotten that,
right.
That Toronto got within 3.5 games after they were started 35-5. They went 4-8 after that, and suddenly anyway, and it happened again near the end of the season. Toronto got within a few games. Anyway, the AL East was a beast back then. A different team won every year from 1981 to 86.
Sure did.
Anyway, so let's talk a little football here. The Lions lose 31-24 at Oakland. I don't know what to say other than that it wasn't enough. They're not good enough. They're an average team, a very good offense, but a porous defense, even though that's the head coach's specialty. Matt Stafford's a fine quarterback. Great day, 406 yards, 3 TDs. But the final play call was baffling. They took their playmakers off the field. Marvin Jones and Galladay are fabulous receivers. These guys are all pro caliber, and they weren't in the game when this play on 4th and 1 was aimed for tight end Logan Thomas.
They fake the run. Broken up in the back of the end zone. And the Raiders will win.
Obviously not good enough.
Who's was it hoping? Ever explained after the game?
Well, Matt Patricia speaks and coaches speak, which is to say, what did he say?
Yeah,
anyway,
what did he say?
This is what he said.
You know, we always got a couple plays on the sheet that we can go to, and really I think in that situation that was the one being so close down in there, we thought, you know, drew the most attention. You know, again, we're trying to get outside of the edge right there, and we didn't. So they kind of beat us there in the inside part of it.
So you can figure that out for yourself, what that exactly means. He had a couple of plays, that they have scripted for that. I guess he thought the element of surprise, but to go to your third tight end might not be the smartest.
Well, they really blew a big chance because Green Bay, Minnesota, and Chicago all lost yesterday.
They're not going anywhere anyway.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. All of those, you know, that may be the only division. There may not be a winner. I mean, everybody's beating everybody. Everybody's losing, and that
I think Green Bay might win that division.
Well, I hope so. I think they're the class of the division.
Even if the Lions had won, and by the way, they've lost 4 out of 5. Their lone win over the lowly Giants. But even if they'd won, they'd be 4-3-1. Green Bay has 7 wins. They're still 3 back. They're 2 back of Minnesota. So even if they won, it's still.
But
tighten it up,
you know,
not significantly.
But there's 1,000 different ways they can still get in. I mean, it's going to be tough. Don't
seven. If they win 7 of 8, they'll get
be
in.
7-1 yeah. to actually
get
in.
They have 3 wins. They got 8 games to go. They played half the season. If they win 7 of 8, and you know that it ain't going to happen.
And is there anybody in the country that thinks they'll go 7-1?
Nobody. No.
Well, Eli, you've had an awful lot to say right now for having said just a couple minutes ago, quote, I don't have a lot to say.
That's all I said. Everything I have to say about it. That's all I got to say.
So I have something to say.
Please
about
say
the
it.
Game.
We're all ears.
Do you know something? The Lions could have won that game on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And when you think about it, they should have won that game.
It never felt like it.
And they would have won that game on Sunday, if only. And don't forget this. You can talk about the last play all you want. But these guys are up in that game 14-10 near halftime. Stafford throws just into the end zone. And he throws an interception. The Oakland DB makes a great play on it. Now, the Lions should have scored right there. That makes it 21-10, and maybe the Raiders don't come back. Instead, it's an interception. Oakland drives the length of the field, and with 1:12 remaining in the second quarter, scores a touchdown of its own. Uh-huh. To me, that was the big deal in the latest Bob Page's Lions lament.
Because the defense just isn't any good. 450 yards offense.
Well, Stafford threw the interception.
Yeah, well,
listen, okay. I watched every moment of the game. I even watched the damn commercials yesterday. And I got to tell you something. It never felt like to me that the team was going to win the game. Never, ever. It was always whatever they do, they're going to go down and score the next touchdown. I'm talking about Oakland. And they did. By the way,
Gruden's, the second half was kind of the scoring slowed in the second half.
By the way, Gruden's done a hell of a job with this football team.
Yeah.
It's miraculous what he's done since last year.
He's been there as long as Patricia's been there. But
how about the Patriots? They lost their first game of the year Sunday night.
Very surprised that Lamar Jackson is great.
And are you ready when we talk about the crummy game, not of the weekend, the crummy game of the year in the National Football League? The New York Post headline this morning, big headline. Shame on Adam Gase, the Jets' biggest loser. Can you imagine the Jets lost that game at Miami on Sunday to a team that had not won a game this year, a new head coach? They've destroyed the Dolphins franchise. They've ripped it up. They got nothing to play for except maybe to try to get a win. Mm-hmm. The Jets didn't have much to play for either. They'd won one game at least. And how did the Jets go down to Miami? And you know what? People in the media were writing about that ridiculous excuse for a game. And they said, can you believe the Jets? Mm-hmm. Adam Gase was even booed when he came off the field at Miami. That's because half of us in New York live down there. That's
what was booed. So the Jets have won one game, and they were supposed to win yesterday.
Yeah, it was the bad news Bears.
It is the bad news Bears. But, I mean, that organization has gone upside down for a long time.
So they're 0-7 Miami, and they win the game. Brian Flores, the coach, doused with a Gatorade bath afterwards.
Yeah, I saw that.
Dozen players surrounded with congratulations. Owner Stephen Ross, U of M's own, gave him a hug as the two headed to the locker room with wide smiles. Ross was also seen giving a fist pump to a pending Dolphins victory by the CBS broadcast, and Flores got the game ball. So, you know, doesn't take a lot when you're 0-7 to get people excited, but it's just one game like they won the Super Bowl.
Well, somebody apparently said, well, we're not going to win a game this year, so let's have a good time. I mean, that's what it looked like when everybody's
all right, now to one of my
Before we're not leaving the football yet.
So I'm listening to this, and I forget where I was watching, if they said, so the Dolphins are off the Schneid. And I said, you know, what the hell is
one
the
win?
Schneid? Do you know what the Schneid is?
At zero.
It sounds like a Yiddish term.
Yes, it is. The Schneid, as the worddetective.com explains, is actually short for Schneider, a term originally used in the card game Gin, meaning to prevent an opponent from scoring any points.
Right.
Schneider, from German, probably via Yiddish, Bob, you are right, where it means tailor. Apparently, the original sense that if you were a Schneidered in gin, you were cut as if by a tailor from contention of the game. That's been around since 1886, short from Schneid. But I've never liked this phrase. It doesn't make any sense. Schneid.
One of those terms that goes along with the game of gin. Pat Dobson, a pitcher with our ball club, was the greatest gin player I ever saw in my life. And, of course, I think I was. And I went on there, and for about 3 days in a row, I don't think I won a game. He proved to me that he was the greatest gin. He remembered every card that was played.
By the way, only on the No Filter Sports podcast do you get really interesting, useless information like that. I'm proud to say.
I'm trying to say, here's another group of my favorite whipping boys in the entire sports world, the Cleveland Clowns.
Oh, yes.
News has come just before we began taping this program on Monday morning that the Clowns have waived safety Jerome Whitehead. Now, what happened on Sunday? A Broncos tight end ran over Whitehead on the way to a 75-yard TD reception. That and a missed tackle on another big play. And Whitehead was really vilified on social media and even on the Browns' own radio network. In response to that criticism, Whitehead wrote on Twitter right after the game, ladies and gentlemen, I quote, "Come get it in blood, bitch made ass little boy. I'm out there with a broke hand. Don't get smoked. I'ma kill you, bitch. That's on blood." Those are quotes.
You know what the Browns did?
They waved him immediately Sunday morning.
Did he say it like that?
Those are quotes.
Did he really say it like that?
No, he wrote it like, yes. I have the transcript here that Brandon got for me. People can attack you directly on Twitter. They can directly
knife after knife.
How about this? "I'ma kill you, bitch" was another one he wrote.
I just said that.
Yeah, right. Well, that was, but he said that the other one was "come and get it in blood, bitch."
I just,
you know, you guys look
quote.
Like you're
We're
taking
both
some.
Both
you
of
know,
them.
Listen to you two guys.
These are
you
different.
Look
one.
Like you're taking some glee and using the word "bitch" here. Is there something going on here I'm not aware of?
Then he says to another guy.
There is, and I'll get to that momentarily.
"Can you whoop my ass, bitch. F football? Let me know when you need the address." In other words, coming over, I'll be anyway. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's really classy, right? We'll
Man,
see
you
him
guys
in prison
love
in about 5 to 10 years.
You guys are sick.
Now, Danny wants to know if there's something he doesn't know. Yes, there is. Shall we continue with the Cleveland Clowns?
Sure, go ahead. I got plenty. But that $14,000 fine has got my attention too.
What? Yeah.
The chief clones on the clones, Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry.
Yes, that's my guy.
Were made to change their, well, then you tell the story. They had to change their cleats halftime of the clowns' latest loss, that game against Denver. Go ahead.
And not only that, but he got fined $14,000 for having his pants too high.
That was a different time.
That's what
he
I mean.
He also wore the $190,000 watch.
Well,
the shoes he had on yesterday were clown shoes from the Joker.
I was listening to Shannon.
Why shouldn't they be on the clowns?
That's right.
That's exactly right. And I was listening to Skip Bayless, who really knows very little about anything, and Sharp this morning on one of the radio shows.
Shannon Sharp, yes.
And lo and behold, Shannon Sharp comes out of the box this morning talking about all the fines he incurred because of not wearing the right cleats or not wearing the right shirt or not wearing the right pants. He said he was fined over $80,000 during his career.
It's called compliance. They have compliance rules.
Right. Well, I understand, you know, but what about winning?
Well, whatever.
Let's fine him for losing.
Listen.
Fellas, here's my thing. A lot of folks listening to us right now have a dress code where they work. You want to keep your job?
Right.
Then what's the problem?
Right.
Either you conform and shut up or you go work someplace else. And I know that none of the people listening to us right now is making millions and millions a year. That would be a job anybody in their right mind would want to keep.
Notice the
emphasis on anybody in their right
this
mind.
This is the pay attention to me era. Look at me. That's why we celebrate sacks when we're down by 3 touchdowns. It's why we do dances in the end zone. Look at me. Look at me. You know, Joe Namath wore the fur coat. He had all kinds of, you know, the way he dressed up. But on the field, he wore his football uniform. So, you know, you
that's
got
how I wound up with my Nehru.
There's like 3 hours a week, 16 times a year. You got to wear the uniform, but that isn't enough. Of course, yeah. He also had the $190,000 watch. Heard that watch anywhere from $500,000 to $150,000.
Yeah. But of course, they did change their cleats at halftime. I think we said that. Yeah. One of the great guys, one of our favorite people, Eli and I ever covered, was the longtime Lions running back, Dexter Bussey. And when Bucks retired from the NFL and the Lions, he got a job representing the league as a uniform policeman at all mm-hmm. Lions games. Mm-hmm. So I'd sit with them in the press box sometimes. It'd be like, you know, an hour before kickoff. The guys are warming up on the field. Dex, what are you looking for right now? Well, Bob, you know, this guy's got it. I don't like the high top shit. I said, this really what you want to do for a living? Sit up here with binoculars, which he had, and look down at the dress?
You know, in 1994 or 95, I get which season, Chris Spielman's last, he tore his pectoral muscle in the first game of the season. And Spielman's thinking, he mentioned it yesterday, because I believe he did a Lions game yesterday, and he said, if it's your upper body, you play. If it's your lower body and you can't run, you don't play. But this thing oozed blood, and Bussey, like every 2 series, have to say, Chris, you got to change your shirt because the blood was oozing through, and that wasn't compliant either. Anyway, are we going to dispense with the Patriots that fast? It's over? Just they lost the game, and that's it?
And nobody's going through the year without losing a game. The Patriots even proved that in the Super Bowl against the Giants.
And Lamar Jackson.
By the way, 80% of the money yesterday was being bet on New England with most of the bookmakers. 80% of the money. So the bookmakers had one great day yesterday.
Yeah.
80% of the money going to
So while everybody's, the Patriots lost, Brady said very simply, losses always find a way to recalibrate how you see yourself, and we obviously have a lot of work to do, you know, so they just move on from that.
He's so profound when he loses a game, isn't he?
By the way, what you didn't say about Beckham, not only his own shoes, he's really, and you know, Rex Ryan, your old buddy, had the foot fetish.
You got to get him on.
The foot fetish. But Beckham also gave Brady the
And folks, Eli's not going to go into that. Because this is a family radio program and podcast. Go to the internet and look up Rex Ryan's foot fetish.
Wait a minute.
Listen, I know Rex real well.
Beckham gave Brady the goat shoes after they played them, and Brady was thrilled by that. So he's very foot-oriented. Anyway.
I got one more. The Packers. They went out a day or so early to California to play the Oakland
LA Chargers.
The LA Chargers. And Rodgers, that the bottom line is we should never do that again because everybody chose to do different things with an extra night or two out here in California. Folks, if you only go out there one time a year, it's Jollywood time, not Hollywood time. Right. It's not football time. It's play time, because there's all kinds of things out there you can play with.
Absolutely.
And you know what? As you go out there time and time and time again and spend 4 and 5 days out there, you take that luster off of it, and then it just becomes another city. But if you're just going out there to rock and roll, and that's what they did apparently, and that's what he's all upset
take
about.
A break. Here's something. I know we got to take a break, but I'm just going to say this about that, Denny. Had you played when you played, and Major League Baseball had a franchise in Miami as they do now, you ask Eli and ask me about what they call the South Beach factor in the NBA.
I'm well aware of South Beach. I'm well aware. But you know what? We went into city for 3 and 4 and 5 days. That's the big difference. You know, you can't party every night. I don't think you can. Yeah. Can you, Eli?
No.
If you're pitching every fourth day, you can.
James.
No, not even every fourth day.
James Holzhauer, to close out the pro football.
The big guy.
James Holzhauer on Jeopardy, who won all that money and is the sports gambler and has a platform, said before the season started, the worst bet would be the Cleveland Browns. It's all hype. They were 7-8-1.
That's right.
And all this excitement about we're just seeing SportsCenter in the background because Max Kellerman was big on the Browns, and now they're 2-6. So he's a smart guy. We should try and get him on the show sometime. Anyway,
Worst bet, when we get him on the show, we'll ask him. Next worst best, the FLs.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Great eyesight is a lifestyle gift we all seek and cherish, and we make sacrifices to try and get it. We deal with annoying contacts. We're upgrading our prescription. We keep those reading glasses in every room in the house. Get rid of all of it. Just get rid of all of it. You get custom LASIK. No more need glasses or contacts. You get, if you're over 45 and hate those reading glasses, you get the multifocal lens exchange. You won't need them for the rest of your life. You'll see the fine print and see 20/20 or better at a distance. This is it's a big step to take to get eye surgery, but take the first step and just call the Aldo Eye Center. It's number one in Michigan. He's done more of these procedures than anybody else. Get the free evaluation. See what your issues are exactly, and he'll tell you how we can possibly help you solve them. Then make the decision. You call 1-800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. The evaluation is free. Find out what works for you. The only thing you stand to lose are those contacts, glasses, and reading glasses.
And now our good friends at Hall Financial. Hall Financial has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 in this year, 2019. David's team of mortgage pros gives every client VIP service, ensuring that they feel like a name and not a number. Hall Financial will walk you through the process of buying your home and provide you with a top realtor in your area. Who wouldn't want that type of five-star service? Hall will cater to your schedule day and night and on weekends. They work for you, and you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall Financial. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refi. Like Eli did. He got all that money up front, too. Or chat with them online at DavidHallMortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. Equal housing lender, NMLS number 1467435, 248-308-5000, Hall Financial.
You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
And now on to your beloved alma mater, Mr. Zara.
Oh, what's to say about them? They beat, I got no comment on that game either. They beat Maryland. Not very impressive.
I do. I mean, the opening kickoff of the game, Giles Jackson of Michigan returns at 97 yards for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Game, set, and match to the Wolverines. Click, what's on Bowling for Dollars today?
Well,
I mean, it was a mismatch from the get-go.
I didn't think Michigan played that well. It was reasonably close before
they Michigan never plays that well.
Well, they did. It's from the second half of the Penn State game through the Notre Dame game. They looked like a number one team in the country.
Oh, they did not.
They looked like a top 10, top 5 team in the country.
Please.
They looked almost as good as Ohio State.
Well, the offense struggled at time. I loved it when the second quarter started with a shot in the Maryland stands. There was hardly anybody at that game, even with Michigan there. And a bunch of kids are holding up two humongous banners across two sections. Steve Levy, my old colleague from MSG broadcasting the game, says that this is because Maryland is on, and I quote, the National Student Section Watch List. You know, I'd be watching too.
What does that
see
mean?
See what these kids are going to do up in the stands, what they might throw on the field or what might happen as the game went on. That was kind of silly. Jeez. Then, of course, Maryland had a chance to get on the board. 37-yard field goal, clang. Michigan's up 21-0 at halftime, and they went from there.
Yeah, they didn't. They weren't overly impressive, but they won the game, and it doesn't really matter how they won or whether they were dominant or not. They're in position now after a bye week next week to play the Spartans. They should beat the Spartans. They could win in Indiana. That could be a tough game. And then the Ohio State game, which could be very, very interesting.
Has any spread come out in a Michigan State game yet with them?
No, it's because Michigan State's got to play Illinois this week.
Oh, that's right, too.
What do you think about that one?
What do you think?
I don't engage in talk like that. As you know, I have no idea what the spread would be. I never even look at such things. But let me ask you this. Is this a good time for a bye for Michigan? All of a sudden, starting with the second half of the Penn State game, they started to look like the Michigan we thought we were going to see. You want to play this week or you want to take a week off?
I'd rather play this week, but they're not going to play
I would,
this
too.
Week.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always thought that the byes were better coming in the first three or four games rather than half of the season over with, and then you get a bye because, you know, your engines are starting to run by the middle of the season.
They got two byes,
two
which byes is kind of crazy.
Sure. Yeah.
And, of course, the Spartans themselves. Joe Bacci now, what was it? Was it a diuretic?
Here's the thing about that. You know, one week ago today when we recorded this show, got off only to learn through news reports that came out that afternoon that the former president of Michigan State University, Luana Simon, was going to be prosecuted.
We talked about
for her
that.
Alleged role. We talked about that on Thursday.
Right.
So we do the show on Thursday, get off, and what happens late Thursday afternoon? Michigan State star Joe Bacci, the news comes in, has been suspended for PED use. And so now this is the first chance we've had to even talk about this. This kid is not only a great player, and of course they say he's a great kid, he's the leader of this entire football team. And the funny thing about it is Bacci says he's appealing his suspension to the Big Ten. Here's one thing Joe has not said yet. Quote, I didn't do it. I haven't heard that from Joe. This guy's career is over at Michigan State. What a way to end
Hang on a minute. There may well be a reason why he hasn't spoke. He probably has an attorney, and the attorney says, don't open your mouth. That's the only way to make this work and to get you back playing. Don't open your mouth.
I'm innocent, and other than that, I have no comment.
He doesn't even have to say that.
I would throw out the fact that there are many substances that are banned that appear in other things. And so there's a lot of excuses that people make, but maybe it was in some type of nasal spray that he took to breathe. Who knows? He doesn't have to admit he did anything wrong. He may have admitted that he made a mistake by not knowing what was in whatever substance he took. So I don't know. I would have said something.
So now they got Illinois this Saturday in East Lansing, 3:30 kickoff. And you would think, well, at least you would have thought a month ago, Michigan State's a big favorite in this game. But the Illini, as you recall, beat Wisconsin.
Yes, they did.
A Wisconsin team that humiliated the Spartans in Madison 38-0 3 weeks ago. This could be a disaster coming up for Michigan State Saturday, and heaven help them at Ann Arbor.
Yeah. Let me ask you a Michigan State question out there. I find this very interesting. I'm not quite sure how I feel about it, but Tom Izzo has put his son, his adopted son,
this
Steve,
is a great question,
on the
We've
team as a walk-on.
This.
No, we haven't. Not in this way.
Haven't. Okay.
That the fact that although he's not getting a scholarship, he's taking up a seat on the bench. And he has no qualifications to play college basketball other than he's Tom's son. In high school, he averaged in his senior year 1.5 points a game and averaged under 5 minutes a game. He's 5'8". And so he's not in any way, shape, or form a Big Ten basketball player. And yet he's taken up a spot on the bench. It's a nice fuzzy story. Tom's been away for 18 years while the kid's growing up. Now they get to spend some time together. But there's got to be some kid who scored 22 points a game playing in this PSL that didn't get a scholarship that could be on that team. Is it okay?
It doesn't
put your son
bother me.
No,
it doesn't bother me.
Doesn't bother you? Well,
you know, it bothers me a little bit because there are so many other kids out there that should have a position on the basketball team. I mean, you're right. There's somebody
they're not
out
play
there
anyway.
But wait a second.
Well,
how
but
do you
still
know
an honor to be
play
on the team, and
wait a minute.
Shouldn't you have to earn your position on a team?
Yeah.
This is nepotism in the ultimate way.
It's nepotism. Now, there's no question. I got no problem with it.
Okay.
You remember when the birds sang, Eli? Remember when the birds sang, Jesus is just all right with me? Tom Izzo is just all right with me.
Okay. I mean, it's not really a Rudy story. Maybe it's kind of like a Rudy story. Or that guy years ago named Matt Ishbia. Remember Matt Ishbia?
Yeah.
Came off the bench. But he was a pretty good high school.
Yeah, I don't know,
he was
man.
A pretty good high school. Okay. And so they Izzo played in the game. They were ahead by 40 points, and he made one out of two free throws, and the team went crazy. It's kind of like a special ed type of thing to me.
But this is what I wonder. When they had the
I would go that far.
It is. It's like when you cheer the kid dying of cancer who gets to play, run through the Nebraska defense, and they put him on their shoulders. It's kind of like that.
This is the question I have. And when they say, hey, listen, if you want to try to make the basketball team, come on out here. We're going to run this. You know, I'll bet there were a lot of kids that came out there, you're right, that had an average of 18, 20, 22 points a game that did not make the team. I think that is what should be considered. But he takes a position on the bench. That's one less player that may be a player. And, you know, you never know what a player is until they get a chance to play, Bob. I mean, it's really unfair just to say, well, he's not going to play either. That's
the last guy on a bench never plays.
Bob, you never know.
Well, no, I'm not saying so.
Look at some of the guys that have now been big stars in the NBA that were horrible.
I see your point, but that's a minor issue here. The issue here is that somebody who would have the dream of a lifetime to be on that bench and doesn't get it because the coach puts his kid in there. Yeah. Anyway, that's all.
Since you mentioned a minor issue, the major issue is this. Just about four blocks from me, Tuesday night, tomorrow night, Michigan State, number one in the country in all polls, plays Kentucky. Number two Kentucky.
What a game. Wow.
What a game.
Do you like the first game? It's a doubleheader, you know. It's the State Farm Classic. You like the first game of that doubleheader? How about Duke against Kansas?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. This is going to be a great night.
Yeah, I like that.
So, now, reports say that Kentucky hasn't looked great in his two preseason games so far. But, you know, Cal, he's going to have his usual one-and-done guys ready. State counters with the young man universally acclaimed by the media as the top-ranked college basketball player in America, Cassius Winston. Now, I'm anxious to see freshman Rocket Watts. Struggled a bit in the preseason. He missed all 5 three-pointers he took in an exhibition game against Albion College. But, you know, Izzo is actually comparing Rocket Watts to both Keith Appling and Gary Harris, two great guards at MSU a few years back. And that's why, Eli, I told you on a recent show that State's not going to miss the injured Josh Langford as much as a team might ordinarily do when a top player goes down. These big games are what Izzo likes to play in the early season. I don't know why, because Michigan State more often than not loses these games. But, wow, what a doubleheader Tuesday night.
It's not like football where you lose a game or two early and you're done.
Yeah,
so they can easily, and whether you're ranked, and he's going to make the NCAA tournament, which really doesn't matter anyway. So I think it's a great way to start the season.
You know, he'll find out an awful lot about the kids. Can they play under this kind of intensity? Can they play with these big crowds? Because it's going to be a monster crowd for the kids, and it's not going to be a Michigan State crowd.
Right. Remember they had him on the aircraft carrier to start the season about 10 years ago?
That was a great show.
Maybe it was less than that.
Yeah, so, I don't know that it's not going to be a Michigan State crowd. We have several alumni groups here. They have big meetings and big membership. I think you'll be a little surprised tomorrow. There'll be as many Michigan State fans there as Kentucky fans.
Okay. Here's another.
You'll have a lot more gamblers there than you will fans.
Let me throw out another interesting story that has kind of ethical values to it. Like we said with the Izzo thing, is it ethical to take up a spot? Nassau County, Long Island, right near where I grew up, I live in Suffolk, which is was the next county over, has a policy designed to prevent lopsided results in football games. If a team wins by more than 42 points, the winning coach has to explain to a special committee why such an outsized margin could not be avoided. Well, a school called Plain Edge won 61-13. The team was in violation, and the coach was given a one-game suspension, the first one to be punished under the three-year-old policy. And the coach says, look, we're up 35 points, but I feared that the South Side might stage a comeback. And you know what? To us, it seems absurd to come back from 35, but you know how coaches think. The game is never iced until the very last moment.
If that team had come back from 35 points down, that could have been the worst coach in the history of basketball.
That's right, right.
Or football.
So, you know, as the athletic director said, Who said that this committee is experts on sportsmanship? Right. What are you teaching children, he said, by saying, play fairly, but now you are playing too well. Don't play anymore for the rest of the game. Where's the life lesson? You know, maybe this is a stretch. It kind of reeks of socialism, which is the dirtiest word in America right now. Not that we don't have socialistic policies. Medicare is socialism. Social Security is socialism. But it's a very dirty word, and the Democrats have to be very careful that socialism doesn't creep into the... But that's what,
I'm glad you mentioned that.
That's kind of what this is. That. This is to say, hey, let's get... This is the whole participation trophy, the helicopter parents, the bulldozer parents. We've created this where we don't want our children to feel any pain at all. It could hurt their self-esteem. So to lose by more than 42, or only losing by 42 is okay, but 43 is a sin. This is really a stupid rule.
But here's the reason. Play better or quit football. Since you brought up politics just now the way you did, think of this political issue. It doesn't matter what side of the equation you're on, but the Republicans are always screaming at the Democrats, keep government out of my life. Way too much big, unwieldy government doing things they shouldn't be doing.
Right.
Why the hell is a government getting involved in high school football scores?
Absolutely. Agree.
Well, you're going to have, you know what? People are just moving the wrong direction too often right now. Right now, you can steal first base in a league around baseball. They now can wave, and you can now take first base without having to throw a pitch. What is so extremely wrong with getting up 35 points and then stopping the game? I don't think it's right, because you know what? There was a great coach with Green Bay at one time, and all of you know who I'm talking about. He said one thing. Winning is everything.
No, winning isn't the only thing. Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing.
Right.
But, you know, so it's different. You know, in 1968, I was a freshman at Michigan. They go down to Ohio State. They're losing 48-14, getting schlocked by Woody Hayes' team. What does he do? He goes for two after the touchdown. They said, why'd you go for two? He says, because they won't let me go for three. That's okay. Then you come back the next year and you beat them, and you beat them. So I don't think it's teaching these kids anything. It's teaching them the wrong thing. Then get better, work harder, and follow. And here's the thing.
Let me give you the thing, but go ahead.
No, there's a process. And I stood behind the bench when my kids went to Lazar High, and they were down by 30 points. And the coach said during the timeout, he said, just follow the process. That's what you do. You play the way we play. Kids went out there, they played hard, they narrowed a little bit, but they learned the lesson. Do what we know how to do. Do it as best as we can, and the results will take care of themselves.
There's something else, too, when you start to back off in a game and you do not want to score more points, if that's going to be the rule that stays in. People will get hurt. People will back off. People will have less intensity, and somebody will come behind them and get them in the knee, get them in the back. Yeah. That's not the way to play the game. You need to play as hard as you can all the time, and it'll save a lot of injuries.
Brandon, you were telling me there was a follow-up. So the suspended coach... now, his assistant coach coaches him this week, because this was last week it had happened. And
yeah, they had a game this past weekend, and they are a great football team. They got up 35-0, and once they reached that first down, punt. Every time they got a first down,
that's so
punt.
Wrong.
Well, they're sarcastically saying stupid rule.
Yeah.
What a joke. Now, Danny, as a segue into baseball, where I'd like to go next at least, I just want to ask you this question. I guess we have a commercial break coming up. I don't see what your problem is with stealing first base, this experiment thing. I look back, for instance, at my own high school life. The hottest girl in our school was named Kathy Gregory. She was I couldn't get
and
the
first base. And you wanted to get to first base.
But if I could steal first base with a woman, that's a big thing.
Yeah, well, usually you're stealing second base as far as that goes.
Why do you equate everything to sex? Especially at your age.
Shows where my, because I'm young and virile still.
Oh, my.
Danny, he once had a great comment about sex. You said, you don't lose your desire for it when you get old. It just becomes less available. That's a very good point. I agree. Anyway, from the power and luxury of Navigator to the whisper, silent interior brand new Corsair crossover, Hoot McEnery's lineup of Lincoln SUVs is as good as it gets. Lincoln SUV sales up over 20% in 2019, thanks also to two other stunning new entries in the market, Aviator and Nautilus. I love my new Nautilus from Star Lincoln. For the comfort features, the 14-speaker Revel audio, all the technology, the Co-Pilot 360. I've been loyal to Hoot McInerney's business ever since I met Hoot back in the 70s, and now I know his son, I know his grandson. They're great guys. Carry on the tradition of luxury with a spotless dealership and the renowned Star treatment. Come see the best lineup of American SUVs or buy online with the effortless ownership experience, starlincoln.com. Order your model, features, color, and just roll in and pick it up at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And another one of our very favorite Red Shovel sponsors, Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategy, brings a passion for serving clients with the highest ethical standards, energy, and supportive work environment. You know, most people just don't spend enough time on their investments. Some spend less than 45 minutes or less, a year or less. So call Luke. He'll create a plan to help reach your financial goals. The consultation is complimentary. He'll answer all your questions. Retirement may be fast approaching. Maybe you're young, need to balance things out. Check out Luke. He will help you manage your future and feel comfortable about it. Call 248-663-4748, 248-663-4748. Advisory services off the Royal Alliance Associates. Other marketing names, product services referenced here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates. You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And coming up, Bobby Hull, the great Bobby Hull.
The one and the only Bobby Hull.
Got the mailbag. What else we got going on?
Well, I said I wanted to go to baseball, so I'm just going to throw a simple one line out. Steven Strasburg opted out. It was guaranteed $100 million contract on Saturday. Take it away, boys. Your thoughts?
Well, good for him. Makes sense. Nobody's surprised. Nobody's upset. Washington.
Well, I'm sure some Washington fans are upset.
Well, no. They drafted him. He's in position to make the top money in baseball, and he has an opportunity. The contract was signed by both parties. He pitched 3 years of it. It was 7 years, 175, which is 25 a year. 30 or so is the price. Why should Gerrit Cole have the opportunity and not him? So that's just the way it goes.
I do have a problem with signing a seven-year contract and then being able to break the contract.
No, he's not breaking it. It was part of the contract.
I understand that.
Yeah, it's part of the contract.
But he signed a 7-year deal with an out halfway through it. I just have a problem with that. Listen, Washington took good care of him. They hung in there with him when he got hurt. He did not have to come back. He had plenty of money then. You know, he got $5-6 million to sign when he first got into baseball and made some big money as a first year player also. So he was treated better than most guys do coming out of an injury. And you know what? Out of the four guys, I liked him the most. I think I said that a number of times on the show because he's so consistent with his stuff and he's got command of his stuff. He's going to be around a long time.
Well, he's 31.
Yeah, I think so.
And they've
31.
And
he's 5-6 years.
He does have the greatest agent in the history of the game, Scott Boras, the most much hated Scott Boras. And you remember in 2012, we talked about it last show, they shut him down. And it cost him in the playoffs potentially because they didn't win the playoffs that year. He pitched 160 innings. So they've nurtured – you're right. They have nurtured him. He's responded. It's a great relationship. Maybe he should have said, okay, instead of me opting out, extend me with the right number. Maybe they could have done that instead of the threat. But I'm sure there's an understanding there.
And I'm sure he's got a chance. And I'm sure he's got still a chance to be offered a deal, I mean, based upon – his contract.
He'd be offered a deal.
Well, Washington can still extend
the deal
to him. Of course
they can. Oh, he's going to stay there. He's going to stay.
And I got a hunch he will.
I got a question for Brandon, if I may. Brandon is young. He's a wacko lifetime Detroit Tigers fan. So Strasburg, not coming to Detroit, of course, but let's say that he did. Let's say that the Tigers decided, we're going to really up the ante. We're going to give this guy $45 million a year to come pitch for the Tigers. Would you be, as a Tigers fan, excited about that? Would you think, we don't want this mercenary. He wants nothing to do with us or our town, and he's going to get out of here as soon as he's done.
Not at all.
Well, the way I would look at it is...
He called you a wacko, by the way, Brandon. Are you okay with that? He called you a wacko fan.
He's a baseball wacko.
It's okay. The next 3-4 years of Strasburg is going to be peak Strasburg. But when you look at the Detroit Tigers, do they have 3 to 4 years of hitting coming up?
You're not answering my question. My question is, would you be excited if the Tigers signed him?
You know what? I wouldn't think it would be a very good signing.
What if they were
going to win 20 ball games?
Bob didn't set up right. What if they were pennant contending and needed a great starting pitcher?
Well,
how would you feel about it?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, there's your answer.
But with this team currently, I just don't feel like they're going to be competitive. So he would be a waste here.
That's why it was a stupid question, but that's okay.
It's not a stupid question because you didn't rephrase it properly and Brandon answered it properly. And I'll give you an example of this. A guy you and I knew and covered. named Dan Schatzsader, the left-handed pitcher the Tigers got years ago. That guy made – he was a nice guy. That guy made it so plain from day one. He wanted nothing to do with Detroit. Detroit, what am I going to do here with this? So he opted out and got the hell out of Detroit after just 1 year. That was my question. This Strasburg would want nothing to do with Detroit. They're just buying him for $45 million a year. I would not be excited were I a fan. That
okay. Well, let me reiterate.
Wait a second. Jeez, you wouldn't want to watch this guy pitch?
I don't get the point.
I feel, hey, if the Tigers were to get Steven Strasburg and Anthony Rendon, then because now they have, they're bolstering their hitting, and I would love to see Strasburg pitch in the old English D. Well, you bring up some of these young guys, the Casey Mize, the Bo Burrows, the Fiatos, and you know, maybe we got a good starting rotation.
If you are
not yet, though.
Yeah. Here it is. If you're going to sign Strasburg, you also got to surround him with other guys that you're going to have to bring in. Rendon, possibly, but that's way too much money, Rendon. But other guys who can play the game, you got to bring them and let Strasburg be the center of gravity and let everybody else come around him.
Here's what I'm waiting for. Let me tell you what I'm waiting for.
The problem is you got
I'm waiting for.
Finish, Bob. One thing you don't have here, you don't have a new nucleus of anybody with this organization right now.
I'm waiting for
these two phenoms we got down in the minor leagues. We don't know anything about these guys.
Once Sergio Alcantara, once Grayson Long, once Elvin Rodriguez, once Nolan Blackwood, once Alex Lang, once Joey Wentz make it here. Now, you know who those names are?
They're all Tiger farmhands.
Those are the farmhands they got for Alex Avila, for JD Martinez, for Justin Verlander, et cetera, et cetera. So when those guys...
Well, you guys misunderstood again. I'm not going to go there anymore. You misunderstood my question, but now I'll take another risk. Here's a question I know you both can understand, and here's a question I know Brandon already knows the answer to. Who is Nolan Arenado?
Well, he's a star in the National League. He's a short.
Danny's got a blank look on his face.
No. He's one of the top players in baseball.
He's a good player.
He's a great player.
So
what? It's Colorado, right?
What did he do over the weekend?
I don't know.
What did he do over the weekend?
Over the weekend, he won his 7th Gold Glove in as many seasons in Major League Baseball.
Wow.
Seven Gold Gloves. He also, by the way, hit last year 41 homers, 118 ribbies, .315 average. Like Jose Altuve, this is another guy who's already in the Hall of Fame no matter what happens. Now, think about this. The single greatest defensive third baseman who ever lived, not Arenado, and of course that would be Brooks Robinson. I think everybody understands that. How many Gold Gloves did Brooks win in his career?
I'll guess 8.
A bunch.
16.
Really?
16. Yeah, I guess that's a bunch.
16 is a lot.
And, you know, we have these fun arguments in bars, you know, we hang out with our buddies. Well, who's the greatest? No, that guy was better than that guy. No, he wasn't. So Mike Schmidt won 10 Gold Gloves in his career, and that is why Mike Schmidt is the greatest all-around third baseman who has ever lived. You cannot make an argument about that offensively and defensively
home runs.
Combined. Yeah.
I can make an argument. Let me tell you what happens. Once they win a couple, 3 or 4 Golden Gloves, all of a sudden they're the automatic winner the following year. I've seen it with so many guys, including Jim Cott, who's got, 57 Golden Gloves?
He got
Golden Gloves after he left the game.
It's almost like making the All-Star team the next year. Because you made it the last year and your name is on the thing.
That's exactly right. And that happens in Major League Baseball. It's just a foregone conclusion that Jim Cott didn't make an error last year, and we know he's not going to make an error next year. And by the way, when he gets out of the game, he won't make an error. So let's give him another glove.
You also have guys in the other.
They vote at the end of the season. They don't vote at the start of the
season. I know, Bob. I'm making a joke, Bob.
But, you know, a lot of guys that vote are cover the America thing, and they're still voting for National League guys anyway.
Yeah, they are.
Now, this is an interesting story, if I may. Do you have any other important questions, Bob, for me or Wacko Brandon or anybody else?
Yes. I wish to know the meaning of life.
Well, the life in Doug Mantzowicz's life and Luis Lopez has changed. They were both fired by the Tigers last week.
Oh, jeez. I didn't even know what
they were managers in the organization. So they're now, instead of getting rid of players, they're getting rid of managers.
The Florida State fires Willie Taggart. 9 games into his second season. They lost 27-10 to Miami on Saturday. The story, though, is that besides being a bad decision to hire him, they bought him out for $17 million.
This is crazy.
Second largest in college football history. The president of the school said, let me see the quote here, He said, I think very highly of Coach Taggart. This is President John Thrasher. Very highly of Coach Taggart and wishing well. But in the interest of the university, we had no choice but to make a change. In other words, in order to satisfy our alumni and keep people coming to the ball games, we had to fire this fine teacher and wonderful young man and pay him $17 million to go home.
But I've got a question. Do we know that if they kept him and if they just kept him till he one day passed on or he quit, would they have to still give him the $17 million?
No, he would have to earn his.
Well, why won't you keep him then? I wouldn't give him the $17 million.
Because he had no choice.
Well, you're talking about college football, Eli. I wonder how many of our young fans know who the late Daryl Rogers was.
Wow.
And have heard one of his greatest sing. Daryl had a lot of success at Michigan State, coached Gibby, Eddie Smith in the late 70s. Then he became head coach of the FLs. The whole scene eventually spiraled into such a disaster with the FLs. What a surprise. That Daryl actually asked us once. Were you there that day, Eli?
I don't know.
After another bad loss, quote, what does a guy have to do to get fired around here?
Didn't he
actually said that.
Yeah. He said that with the Lions. He was with the Lions
The FLs.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question I have is, does this apply to Jeff Blashill as well? What a joke. The Wings have become after such a promising start.
He lost 10 of 11, right?
That winless streak. They beat Edmonton and Detroit last Wednesday. You see what happened over the weekend? They got hammered at Carolina 7-3. Then Saturday night, just decided to take the evening off in a listless 4-0 shutout at Florida. Wings are 4-10-1. And this club has too much talent to be this bad. But he's still young. You know, he's 46 next month. He'll get another NHL chance someday, I assure you. Interestingly, here's a good tidbit. The Wings have never fired a coach during the season since Harry Neal in 1985. Well, good guy from Sarnia, Ontario. Oh, yeah. Great commentator, Hockey Night in Canada.
I don't think they're going to fire him. I think he will last the season. I want to do the mailbag, and then we're going to do Bobby Hull. But now we have to say goodbye to our radio listeners on WCWA.
But wait, let's let him go on. And let me defend the Red Wings again. I keep doing this.
I got to say goodbye.
All right. The Red Wings never promised us a Rose Garden.
Okay. You can defend them.
And Pistons after the break.
Okay. And you have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, moving on.
Let's talk about the Pistons. Two mediocre teams Saturday night in Detroit, Brooklyn and the Pistons.
Yes, I actually watched
Drummond
that game.
Did you see that game? I saw some of it too.
Some of it too.
Drummond was a beast again. 25 points, 20 rebounds, 5 blocked shots. It's the third straight game he's gotten 20-20. And don't forget, folks, as the Pistons prepare to play at Washington Monday night, we tape this Monday morning, he's a free agent. He's not coming back to Detroit. And then what, Eli?
Good question. Then they've got the oft-injured Blake Griffin. They've got the underperforming. What are they going to do for center? That's a good question. Maybe they'll draft John Teske.
Well, there's a name out of this.
Senator I knew Andre Drummond. John Teske is no John Andre Teske. Drummond.
You know, it's sad the mediocrity. The Lions are, in fact, of the three teams, I'd say the Pistons are average. I think the Lions are an average team. We rip them because we want them to win, and it's been 63 years since they won anything. But they're a middle-of-the-pack NFL team. The Pistons are a middle-of-the-pack NBA team. And the Red Wings are, unfortunately, a lower part-of-the-pack hockey team. But let's go to a few games. I'm going to go to a few Piston games. I'll watch. There's nothing
tremendously, great to watch.
Nothing Absolutely. Tremendously exciting. Love the NBA. And
I've always thought that the best athletes were playing in the NBA. I really did. At 7 feet tall, to be able to run like that, move like that, I think it's exceptional.
I agree.
It's unbelievable. By the way, don't look now, but the Lakers have won 5 in a row. Mr. James has gone crazy.
That was a hell of a battle he had the other night against Dallas.
Sure
with the Dallas kid going nuts, too.
Yeah, it was a hell of a game. And he's going to reestablish himself as the guy. Watch.
He is the guy. In fact, let's get to the mailbag because there's a question.
Well, I want one more note here regarding basketball. I know, Eli, you knew this man. I bet, Danny, you did too. Other than a proper obituary in the New York Times, I saw a little last week about Al Bianchi's death.
Yes, yeah. Al Bianchi, good guy.
Yeah, it really was. You know, I used to watch Al on TV when I was a kid. You know, he would take two-hand set shots.
Yeah.
That's how old I am.
Didn't he
Dave
also?
Ambie and Larry Costello were using them too back then.
Oh, did he do the underhand free throw? I'm not sure.
No, Al didn't. Gambie did. Gambie was an underhand free throw shooter. Yeah. So anyway, you look at Al's life. He was 87. And what a country, America. Al's dad, Al's dad, Alfredo Bianchi, was an off-the-boat Italian immigrant who tended coal furnaces in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s just to support his family throughout the Depression, obviously, as well. So Al Bianchi, raised in a working-class area of Queens, New York, and look at all the fame and fortune he found in America and in basketball.
Many great success stories through the world of sports.
My dad was quite a basketball player. And I got to tell you, he used to do the two-hand set shot and then the underhand free throw. And it was always fun to watch. I mean, obviously the game has come a long way since then. But their final scores every time was 32-28, 30-29, that type of stuff. Well, but it was always fun to watch.
There are advocates like Rick Barry who did the underhand and one who said that all players should do it. It's far more accurate. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. All right, you want the mailbag
let's
now.
Let's go to the mailbag.
Drum roll, ding, ding, ding.
Let's make it like a reasonable, not half-hour mailbag, okay? Let's try and keep the mailbag tight.
Because Bobby's on a schedule, so when we get Bobby, we got to do Bobby.
All right, Bobby, go ahead, Bob.
I love the way Eli airs our dirty laundry.
760-89-BALLS, by the way. 760-89-BALLS if you want to leave us a voicemail message or a text or asknofilter@gmail.com. Okay, what you got?
Here we go. From Twitter, C. Michael Raymond, front and center. And this is addressed to Eli and Denny. Mm. Eli and Denny, Bob should be given a few minutes of each show to do freestyle comedy. And if you two guys are not on board with that, I know a show that would accept Bob back with open arms, especially after we hear at Sports Feud today lined up our old sponsor. Remember Top Hat Burgers in Detroit? This guy created his own Twitter account. Some of the people did. Got my picture on it, referring to the old TV show with Ron Cameron, a show on which Denny McClain replaced me when I moved to New York City, and a young Eli Zaret was on as a guest. You can see the old videos on YouTube. I guess he's been putting up, I don't know, sports videos.
I wasn't a guest with Denny, though. I was a guest with you and Ron, right? Was I a guest with Denny?
No, I don't think so.
What?
I think you were a guest with Ron and me.
And Denny, I was a guest on my own show, my former show after I moved to New York, with Denny and Ron Cameron. That's very funny stuff. That's out there.
It is. Speaking of replacing, this is very incestuous because you replaced me at not one but two radio stations.
Oh, absolutely.
WJZZ and WRIF.
And by the way, I have a copy of every Eli and Denny show.
You do?
Every show. And we're trying to figure out how to get them up online.
Well, then, you know what? I'm glad you said that because I'll be in touch with Mr. Raymond and find out. I mean, if he's the guy behind putting these Sports Feed Today shows up, he'll do that for you guys, too, I'm sure.
Okay, that would be great. Let's have him call.
I don't necessarily want him up there anymore.
By the way, Bob, what's the phone number?
From the 90s.
Bob, what's the phone number? We'll call and see if they want you. We'll see if they want you.
Old topics.
Eli has the phone number at his beck and call. It's stored right up in his mind. It's 89-BALLS. That's what you dial. What's the
760-89-BALLS.
Life would not be the same without you.
Go ahead.
I love you, Denny.
Letter number two. What do you have? God.
It's official, ladies and gentlemen. Detroit blogger and internet sports talk show host Greg Eno has been hanging around with me too long. Listen to what this negative MF dared to post on Twitter this weekend. And I quote, "That was an even better ending than I could have imagined. Same old Lions. I'm feeling amused. I love it." Detroit media, when the Lions were 2-0-1, quote, "There's something different about this team. Maybe they're not the same old Lions." Me to the fans, "For the love of God, don't buy it." If I see the words Lions and playoffs in the same sentence anymore the rest of the season, I'm going to barf. Stop. Just stop. Before my divorce from the Lions, Detroit native, of course.
Are you quoting? You're quoting.
Divorce,
are you quoting yourself?
Are you quoting yourself or are you quoting
quoting Greg. So Eno says, "Before my divorce from the Lions, a loss like Sunday's would have made me aggravated, caused me to be curt with my family, etc. Now, I just laugh it off. Divorce is a great thing."
Good. Next letter. Go ahead. Next letter.
Speaking of negative MFs, as we were, we had a guy named John Witzke who writes us a love letter every single week. And it got to the point some time ago that we decided not even to read them on the show anymore. And he's just always caviling, pedantic, didn't make some sense sometimes, and always whining about something he heard that he didn't like. But, John, this week, buddy, you are back on with us.
What
now, I've had to edit your latest missive for clarity and conciseness. So I'm just going to read your opening line, and then I'm going to read your closing line. Your opening line was, love, love, love the podcast, guys. And your closing line, to a very lengthy note, love, love, love the podcast, guys. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Some of I read them every week, and some of it I just don't. I know he hates ESPN, and I'm not quite sure where else he goes. But he seems very, maybe he's too smart for me. Let's put it that way.
Does this sound like a 1960s or 70s rock and roll star or what? Johnny English.
Johnny English.
Johnny
English. Johnny.
Sung by. Who sang that, Danny?
Johnny English.
Johnny Angel. That's right.
Obviously, Shelley Fabray.
Johnny Angel.
I was going to say Leslie Gore, but it was Angel. Shelley Fabray.
Johnny.
So anyway,
Enough. Go ahead.
Johnny English writes, Bob, what are your thoughts on the New York City Marathon? Figure you aren't a marathon running fan, but I wonder if you ever go out to the course to see the professional field, some of the best runners in the world. I think I've heard you say that you used to run. So have you ever thought about training for the marathon or done the shorter distance races held by the New York Roadrunners, great group, New York Roadrunners, in Central Park? Well, Johnny, I used to run in Central Park all the time, but I'm not a nut. I was a 6 to 8 mile hard runner, never run a marathon. Okay. I don't think it's healthy for you. I have great respect for the people who do, including my longtime significant other who ran the New York Marathon 16 years ago. But I mean, running's fine, but it's the pounding on your skeletal system. And every year it's exciting to see which malnourished African is going to win. Look at these guys. I mean, look at these guys across.
They're
coming
not
across
malnourished.
The line.
They just have no body fat. That's all.
No, about 5'1" and 68 pounds.
You're right.
I mean, women runners stop menstruating. There's so many.
This is so far up.
Bob, we're
going to have sliding practice at 3 o'clock.
This is the mailbag run amok. You can't spend 3 minutes on marathoning. It's tune out, and now Bobby Hull's not going to get as many listeners.
Come on, Bob.
Okay.
Right, Denny's, this will put a bigger smile on Denny's face than he has right now. Scott in Novi writes, Denny, do not back off your statement about Max Scherzer and his backing off that playoff game when he was a Tiger and then again just recently with the Nationals. This guy is just about the money. That's it.
Sorry, Scott.
I agree.
Very uninformed. Just about the money?
No, I don't think it's totally about the
money. How much money does he give away every year to charity?
Let me say this to you. Tons of money.
Honest
to God, and that's the reason I respect him so much. But I got to tell you something. He had no choice. Had he had a bullet in his neck, he would have had a pitch start the seventh game.
The shot took two days to take.
Eli, no one's had more cortisone than I have.
Yeah, Max Scherzer, big pussy. Sure.
No, I'm not saying he's a big pussy. I'm just saying that he was really uptight and fearful of losing the World Series.
Well, when you're hurt, that can make you even more fearful. Okay, anything else? Got it?
I got a lot of stuff, damn it. We got time.
No, we don't. We got to get we have to get Bobby on in the next 5 or 6 minutes.
I'm going to get Bobby Hull on very shortly, folks. Mike Vandegenst writes, the show continues to be great, and the guest interviews have been knockouts. Grosse Pointe High School class of 1966, and my bad for getting the well-renowned Bob Page and Tom Gage confused. I'm a little younger than Tom Gage and also Mike. The funny thing about this is, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, Tom Gage and I, the Hall of Fame baseball writer of the Detroit News, of course, we've known each other for 40 years. We grew up together in Grosse Pointe at the same time.
Yeah.
I never knew him, never met him, never heard of him. See, I was a peon. I did not come from a moneyed background, and I had to go to mere public school, a humiliation every day of my life. While Tom Gage, of course, attended Guppis, Grosse Pointe University School, I simply was not welcomed into that august group. So, Tom, if you're listening, admit the truth, buddy. Come forward.
You and Here's Tom look. By the way, you and Tom look a lot alike, just from the knees down.
I want to go there.
Okay.
Now here's the question: did you do your homework, Danny? Because Eli did.
I'm trying to get him off the air so badly.
I know. I'm not going to say another one. I'm done.
Yeah. Go ahead. Last stop. That's it.
Hello from Jollywood.
You know what, Brandon? After the next letter, you're going to cut off his mic. Okay.
Actually, we're going to have that vaudevillian thing—the big red cane that comes out from the side of the stage. Pulls you know, latches around a guy's neck and yanks him.
I think a gong would be good enough. But go ahead.
I want to see if Danny did his homework. I know you did, Eli, because we were emailing about this this morning. So we have an unnamed texter who said, I asked a while back, but don't remember hearing your response. That's because there wasn't any. Just curious who each of your favorite current players are in sports. Any sport, any team. I personally love Christian Yelich and Pete Alonso in baseball and Patrick Laine in hockey. Guys, you want to go? Who are your favorite current
Let me answer this two ways. Number one, I don't know the current guys like I did the older guys. I'll give you an example. If I didn't know Kirk Gibson back in the day, I might not have liked him. But I knew him, and I appreciated him, and I liked him. So guys like Gibby and John Sally and Chris Spielman and Lance Parrish and Grant Hill, these are guys that I knew that I really, really liked as people and as athletes. So it's hard today, but I'll tell you who I like. I like LeBron James. I like his fearless, outspoken attitude. I like the fact that he's willing to talk about China. He's willing to talk about Black Lives Matter. He's willing to, and I saw him as a young player dismantle the Pistons in the playoffs when I covered them. So I appreciate the fact that he's given power to the players, and he's an amazing athlete. So I like LeBron James, even though I don't know him well. The one time I interviewed him, or twice, was after a Piston game. He was very cordial, so he didn't blow me off or anything, and I appreciate him for that. You know who I like locally, and I don't know that well, is Dylan Larkin. Local kid, modest, talented, face of the franchise, trying to make it with a really bad team, and I just like the way he's handling himself and the way he plays.
Sounds like your graduation speech, doesn't it?
Okay, I'm done.
It's a good question. You left a couple sports out of it. You got a favorite baseball player?
Go ahead. I mean, I like J.D. Martinez. I like the way he remade his career. I like guys that are off the scrap heap and look done and that make themselves into stars. And as I watched the Tigers, it was 119 games last year. I think it was 119 or maybe 100. That wasn't 119, man, 108 or 9. I felt for a lot, like Nico Goodrum. He's 28 years old. Is he going to make it? I see how hard he tries. He's a versatile player. Not that good. You know, his stats are only average. But I like him. I like the way he plays. And I say I don't know him, but I just like what he stands for.
I know what you mean.
That's the best
Danny,
I can answer.
How about you?
LeBron James is my top guy. And then the other guys that I really have a lot of respect for, Scherzer, Strauss, and Evans. Darrell Evans. They leave an awful lot in their communities. They do an awful lot in their communities.
But Darrell's not current. Darrell's not current.
Well, I didn't know. We were just talking about
current. Current guys.
Funny, neither of you guys mentioned football. My favorite player in football, why not, is Tom Brady. What an amazing, amazing player Tom Brady has been all these years.
Well, as a player, yes, I agree with that. But I thought we were talking about other
Favorite player in all four current sports?
My favorite guy is still LeBron James.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the guys who bring it every night in every sports. They will sacrifice anything and they will do anything.
And who are
to
those guys?
And who are those? Regard to their, they don't care about their stats.
Okay. Who are these?
Who are those thousand guys?
So Ben Wallace was certainly one of those guys. Uh-huh. I went into the Pistons locker room in Miami a number of years ago. I didn't know the kid. I said, I just want to shake your hand, young man, because you play this game the way it's supposed to be played every night.
And he said, who the hell are you?
My favorite player is now Draymond Green.
Yeah.
Draymond Green.
I see.
Doesn't care about stats. He's about winning, and he'll do anything to beat you.
Mm-hmm. You don't think they all don't bring 100% every night?
That's right, Danny. I think a lot of guys don't play 100% every night. And I think a lot of guys are selfish and concerned about their personal numbers more than the team.
I think there's a lot of truth, but I think they bring 100% every night.
I think a lot do. Let's talk to a guy who brought 100%. And
did he ever?
And what, can I finish this line or
not? No, we got to get Bobby on, Bobby.
You know, this mailbag is not.
On. I want to say, I just want to say Bertuzzi and Glenn Denning are the wings of the same kind of guys, and so is Brett Gardner and Jose Altuve. Now go do what you want to do.
Okay. I want to talk to the Golden Jet. Where do you start with Bobby Hull? He is embedded in the history of the sport, from the original six to winning MVP in two leagues, played 23 years, seven times, led the NHL in goals, first to score more than 50. In fact, I believe it was 1966, and this is what it sounded like.
Now then, Bobby Hull from his own blue line. The Golden Jet driving at center, in on the Ranger defense. He may pass or shoot. He drives one. Goal!
That's Bobby.
Just like it was yesterday, guys.
All right, Bobby, listen, you're 80, and before we get going on hockey, you just had a knee replaced. I know you've been in pain. How are you feeling today? Are you coming back or what?
I've never had so much pain in the last 6 weeks in all my life.
No kidding.
Oh, it's awful.
Because I knew that the show in Nashville, boy, you were hurting real bad.
Oh, yes, yes.
So you had your knee replaced. Was it the first? Is that the first body part you've had replaced, or was this just a particular?
Well, no, I had a shoulder done 8 or 10 years ago. It didn't bother me one little bit. I think within a week I was doing things that I'd always done. But this is something different, altogether different.
We played your 600th goal earlier. I'm not sure it was on that one or not, but you played your brother Dennis fed you on one of those. Your son also is one of the top four scorers in history. Man, what is with the family and the genes? You got to be extremely proud to be not just one of the greatest players of all time, but your family is far and away the greatest family that ever played hockey too.
Well, I don't boast about it, but I know that Brett Hull is likely the greatest goal scorer that ever laced on a pair of tacks. And he can score goals in so many different ways that it's unbelievable. And,
Bobby, I know you've had problems, unfortunately, recent years in your relationships with both those guys. You and Brett are good now, though, aren't you? You guys made up some time ago.
Brett and I never had any problems. Brett had a saying, there was no love lost. He meant we didn't lose it. There was no love was ever lost between us.
So, Bobby, you grew up outside of Belleville, Ontario, in Point Anne. I think that's a ghost town now. My buddy, I think you know him, James Hurst, is a writer in Belleville. He loves you, tells great stories. But one of the things he said is you did not have an easy childhood because your father was a very tough factory foreman. Is that correct?
He was tough, but I grew up in a family of 11. There were seven sisters. And I don't think I ever slept alone until I got married. But anyhow,
that's a great line.
My dad worked hard all his life to raise 11 kids. We never had a whole lot, but went to school with clean clothes on.
You know, you came up in the original six, a very different game back then. The sticks weren't curved. You were kind of the guy who that was your change that you made to the game. Is it still the same game, or is it a very, very different game today?
It is the same game, of course, on the ice, the same dimensions, puck, same size. I think what has changed most would be the equipment, the sticks, the equipment. When I would go into a dressing room where Brett was, the skates were so much lighter. Sticks were all so much better. And, of course, the kids are bigger and stronger and skate faster and shoot harder and make more money, but they don't play for the same reason that we did.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
I think likely I played for maybe five reasons. First of all, to make a boyhood dream come true, to play in the National Hockey League, to work up a sweat so I could drink some beer and entertain you people royally and chase some girls. They were five of my reasons, and I don't know whether they were all in that direction or not.
You think today, knowing what you know now, especially with your sons and everything else, you think you could compete with guys like this at this point?
Were you coming up today?
I believe people have played in every era that rose to like cream rising to the top.
Sure.
You could play in any era. The good ones are good, and they know how to execute. And I think the original six we always thought was the best time during my career, just like you, Denny, coming up in the 60s and 70s. I came up late 50s, as you did in the late 60s.
Yep.
I wanted to be the best I could possibly could be, so I...
And you were.
I tried every shift out there to be the one that all the people, whether there were 10 people in the arena or 100 or 100,000, I wanted their eyes on me. So I wanted to be the best I possibly could be. And I think people of our era, people of your era, we could have played in any era.
I got to tell you something. When I was growing up in Chicago, you know, he's a number of years ahead of me, 5 or 6 years ahead of me. It was unbelievable what he did for the Blackhawks, the city of Chicago. Nobody ever missed a hockey game. I mean, yeah, they only held about 20,000, but I'll tell you, there were millions listening to the radio.
Sure.
And it was all because of him. That's it, Bobby Hall.
If Denny McLean hadn't left Mount Carmel and gone to Detroit, I don't think there would have been room in Chicago for the pair of us. Denny, what do you think, pal?
I think you're right, pal. We'd have called it, Bobby and Denny's Restaurant.
Well, wouldn't that have been something?
Oh, my God almighty.
Who in the game?
One problem, we'd have been our best customer.
Bobby, you had so many great years in Chicago. Then, of course, you made world headlines. Bobby Hull jumps to the World Hockey Association and the Winnipeg Jets in 1972 because you were so underpaid with the Blackhawks. Tommy McVie was your coach in Winnipeg. Huge happening, your first game, every media person's there, everybody's there, and Tommy suspended you before that game started. Want to tell us
why?
That wasn't really
the first of the WHA. That was the first time that we had taken Winnipeg into the NHL. And I played for a guy, as you say, by the name of Tommy McVie, and our manager was John Bergeson. And there wasn't a brain between the two of them. they didn't know.
Bobby, when you joined the Jets, what kind of money were they paying you to go up there?
$110,000 and then $250,000 a year as long as I wanted to play. And if I wanted to coach or manage after that, $100,000.
Oh, so you had decent money there.
That was 1972.
Yeah.
Worth in 72? What cowboy was worth $1 million?
Yeah.
Something happened in 1972 that none of us who saw it will ever, ever forget. And that was the great Team Canada victory over the Russians in the Summit Series that year. It's still the most talked about hockey series in history. The great Bobby Hull was not allowed to play in that tournament and represent his nation because, gasp, he had jumped from the NHL to the WHA.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, stupid.
You are absolutely right.
You're still bitter?
That's the only disappointment that I ever had. I knew that if the Russians were going to challenge the so-called best in hockey, they had a good chance of winning or tying. And what I could have brought to the group, not so much that I thought I would have made the team, but I could have brought the fact that, guys, let's not take these guys easy. The scouting is all wrong. How could you watch guys like Harlamov, Petrov, Mihailov, and all that group and watch a guy by the name of Tretiak and goal and say, these guys can't play? The people they sent over there to scout them didn't know their rear end from second base. The series ended on a good note, and I'm happy for all our guys that went over there to represent Canada during that 72 Summit Series.
You're credited with you and Stan Mikita with the curved stick. They banned it then to protect goalies because goalies didn't wear masks back then. What was the genesis of the curved stick, and are you proud that you were the pioneer of that?
Well, it was a combination of the hook and just a thin blade, because any of you guys that ever played road hockey and wore your sticks down to a thin. Once you got out on the ice, you could really shoot the puck with them. That's a small hook to, how are we going to bend them more? And I said, well, just run them under the hot water until they get soft, and what do we win? Put them under a door and crank them up and put a chair under.
And now all the current players use acetylene torches outside their locker rooms before every game. What have you wrought, Bobby?
Well, we finally got onto that and used the torch. But these kids are smarter again than we are. And of course, timing is everything. And Brett Hull had sure a stick that was within limits from the toe of his blade to the heel of his blade. But then he got smart and he would heat the heel of his stick and bend his stick. It didn't change the 5%, but it sure gave him much more of a hook, and likely had more of a hook in some of his sticks than I ever, McKeever and I ever had.
Bobby, you did so much. It's the list of accomplishments are just ridiculous. From the Hall of Fame to the two Hart trophies to the three Art Ross scoring trophies to the seven times leading the goals, the 600 goals, etc. You did win a Stanley Cup and all that. What are you most proud of? A lot of guys just say that the fact that I lasted that long, you played 23 years. Do you pick anything out, or is it just the career, or what are you proudest of, if anything?
I believe being able to compete, as I said earlier, to make that boyhood dream come true. I think being able to compete with the likes of the Howes and Richards and Beliveaux and Orrs and that group, being able to compete and entertain the way we did was my most important asset. When people say, Bobby, what do you want people to remember you as? And I said, I'd like for them to remember me as an entertainer. And I hope that I entertained royally from 1957 when I broke in until I called her quits in 1980.
Well, I got news for you. You're still entertaining because the hours I spent with you down in Florida were just valuable.
But Bobby. But, Bobby, you didn't entertain me. How many times did I watch you flying up the left wing, unloading a 105-mile-an-hour slap shot to score a goal against my beloved Detroit Red Wings? That wasn't entertaining.
I enjoyed playing in Detroit, second best from any of the buildings in Chicago, because Detroit was my kind of rink. The ice was fabulous, was hard, was fast. The corners were big and wide. And it gave me some room to maneuver. And I did have great luck playing and scoring in Detroit against Sawchuk and Crozier and that group.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but, you know, and on top of that, you had good luck against everybody. I mean, there's no shortage of goals and being a superstar the way you were. I mean, and back
well, the old farmer comes to the city with his with his butter and egg money, and on towards morning, he gets lucky, you know.
hey, Bobby, you just mentioned Yuki, Terry Sawchuk, and, of course, Roger Crozier. Who was the greatest goalie you ever played against?
I don't know whether I can name any great goaltender. I have always assessed goaltending by the way his team plays in front of him. We always had trouble against Montreal. Because they always had such a great team. They always had the puck all night. Guys like Gov Worsley.
Jacques Plante.
Plante, Dryden. All those guys. Plante played in Montreal, and Gov Worsley played in New York. Gov Worsley had the worst goals against record in New York, and Plante won the Vezina for the best goals against. They just traded teams during the summer. And the next year, Plante had the worst goals against record, and Tom Worsley won the Vezina. So
I remember that.
That's all you need to know about goaltending. But I always liked Jerry Cheevers. He was one of my guys that I loved to play against and to play with. You never knew what he was going to do.
I thought your relationship with Gordie Howe was very interesting. You wore number 9. You gave up number 16 and number 7 because he was your idol. And yet you played against him. And back then, there was a lot of hatred. I remember Ted Lindsay telling me that you'd see a guy on the other team when you're visiting, and you'd walk on the other side of the street. So how did the hatred of the other team and the way these original six went at each other, you still loved Gordie Howe and wanted to play with him. And finally you did in Hartford at the end. Tell me about that.
We always thought that Howe was the type of guy that emulated, typified the kind of player that played in, should play in the NHL. And he'd come to play every game. When you played against Gordon Howe, you had to be at your very best. All my career, and I did not take number nine because of Howe's wearing number nine. When I first went there in 57, they just threw me a jersey. And Johnny Wilson had worn it the year before, and it had number 16 on it. And, of course, that wore 16 from 57 to the middle of the 61-62 season. Then Gunzo gave me a number 7 to change my luck, which I wore for the last half of that 61-62 season and the next year. And then when I came to training camp 1963, I went to put my jersey on. There was number 9 there. And I said, Gunzo, you've got the wrong jersey in my locker. And he said, you're better than all those other number 9s. You're going to wear number 9. So,
You can't say that, Bobby.
When I was going east, it was going south. So,
Bobby, one last question. Who do you think is the best hockey player you ever saw? Notwithstanding yourself, who was the best hockey player you ever saw? Was it Gordie Howe?
I'm glad you said that. The best player that I ever saw was my son, Brett.
And That's not what we mean.
Outside of the family, I would say that Bobby Orr likely was the greatest player that released on a pair of skates. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Bobby, some great talk.
I thought there was a guy who wore 99 who was pretty good, too.
Well, you know why he wore 99? He didn't know whether he was a Hall fan or a Howe fan, so he wore 99.
Bobby, hopefully the knee feels better. We appreciate you talking to us through all the pain. Thanks. It's been great, and best of luck. Thank you.
Danny, thanks, and guys, I hope to see you again real soon.
You will.
I enjoy talking with a guy from my era and many, many more years of
I hope so.
Enjoyment, Denny, in the hockey world. And guys, I've enjoyed it so very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
He's a gracious guy, and I think that's part of the hockey, the whole Canadian thing that I noticed when I first got into covering sports. There's a certain politeness, a certain gratitude, a certain appreciation. And for him to thank us for talking to him was, yep, I thought, a very, very nice touch.
And that's the way he is all the time when you're around him publicly. He's just the most gracious guy, and he has time for everybody. You know, I can't compare him to any baseball player right offhand that I can think of. But, man, he stops in the lobby, stops in a restaurant, and signs autographs. Yep. For nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just one of those guys.
We gave kind of short shrift to Dennis Hull because he played the game the same way. This amazing left-handed slap shot. It's really been a shame that they don't get along and they no longer have a relationship. Yeah. But, what can I say? Bobby was great.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks for listening. Alan Trammell on Thursday.
Great.
We're excited to talk to Alan. That'll be great. We'll see you all then. Have a
good week, folks.
Bye-bye.